Hey guys, good afternoon and welcome to the 330 Sports Show. Today is Tuesday, September 14th, 2021. I'm your host, Justin Coffin, and we are live from Youngstown Studio. Phone lines are open if you want to give us a call, 330-595-1600, 330-595-1600. We do have the ticker on the bottom of the screen for some news and notes around the sports world. If you are watching, if you're listening on podcast, obviously that is not an option. But again, 330-595-1600 if you want to call in. We're going to get into a weekend of sports. Pretty interesting weekend. If you're like me and you're a Buckeye fan, a Browns fan, a YSU Penguin fan, a Cleveland Indians fan, it was a rough weekend to say the least. So Lucas, here, let's put that first image up. Here's what we were feeling like on Friday going into the weekend. And then on Monday morning, that's what we're looking like. So, you know, a little bit of a rough weekend, a little bit of the, what's that scene in Pulp Fiction after they're, you know, did all their, cocaine and whatever. You're just feeling a little bit rough Monday morning. But, again, I think sometimes too, we have to put things in perspective. Obviously, the 20th anniversary of September 11th, and, you know, there's things bigger than sports, but this is a sports show, and, you know, sports are what bring us together, and sometimes you get a gut punch like this weekend in the sports world, no matter who you're a fan of. So we are going to get into a lot of different things. We're going to obviously talk Browns Chiefs. We're going to be heavy on the Browns Chiefs. We're going to talk about the Ohio State Oregon game that was. We'll talk a little bit about college football, you know, the overall scheme of things and some different things around the NFL and some other news and notes around the sports world. So if you want to talk about any of that stuff, feel free again to call in on that phone number 330-595-1600. So let's start with the Browns Chiefs. And this is going to sort of be my top five Tuesday list. So let's just dive into this. So these are my overall takeaways from Sunday's game. So first of all, I don't think there's any need to panic with this team. We all know the Chiefs are probably, if not the best team in the NFL, arguably top two, top three. I have a feeling these teams will meet again in January and with a little bit more on the line next game. So if you remember, the NFL added a 17th game. So this game was, you know, obviously the first game of the year, whatever, but obviously an addition to the schedule. So, you know, we're going to treat this like, hey, now we have the opportunity to go 16-1. Not saying the Browns are going to go 16-1. I actually predict them to go 12-5 on the season. And I think that's, I still feel very confident in that. So I actually feel more confident in this team right now than I did pre-kickoff based on a few things, and I'll get into that. So number one, Kevin Stefanski as the head coach. He is the right guy for this team. We all kind of knew that last year, doing the best with what he had. And did he make a few mistakes on Sunday? Sure, absolutely. Did the Browns make a few mistakes? Absolutely, especially in that third and fourth quarter in the second half when the Chiefs were able to come back. You know, the Browns built a 22-10 lead. And I'm going to get into the actual stats of the game here in a minute, but you know, you just can't make, that's my second big takeaway from this game, is you cannot give teams like the Kansas City Chiefs that have the most explosive offense in the NFL, you can't make mistakes like that. So you can't make mistakes against good teams. You can't really make mistakes against bad teams and it not cost you. The Browns forced zero turnovers, and they had two turnovers, arguably three, if you say the fumbled punt, that's technically a turnover on downs. But to me, that's three turnovers. So down, you know, minus three in the turnover department is not going to win you games. Another thing, Odell Beckham Jr. did not play in this game. That was a little bit of a surprise for me. You know, you heard good things in training camp. He you know, you've seen these workout videos, but apparently he went through, you know, the pregame routine and just didn't look quite himself, quite fast enough, quite, you know, wasn't sort of making the cuts like he needed to. So when that news came down around 3 o'clock or 3:30 on Sunday that he was going to be inactive, that was a little bit of a disappointment, you know, because he is the guy that takes the top off a defensive field stretcher, you're going to hear. So, you know, that sort of limits the Browns offense to what they can do, you know, with the run game and to not be able to open up the play action pass or to get some receivers open over the middle because, you know, they have to worry about him as a deep threat. So that was a big loss. We're going to talk a little bit about the Ronnie Harrison ejection too. Now, eight plays into the game, or eight plays defensively into the game, Ronnie Harrison was ejected from this game. Now, Ronnie Harrison started at safety, very good defensive player for the Browns. One of the three returning starters from last year's team was ejected. Now, him and a Chiefs coach, Chiefs running back coach, Greg Lewis, got into it on the sideline. Now, what happened? There was a little bit of a scuffle, you know, as happens on NFL sidelines from time to time. So basically what happened, Harrison made the tackle and, you know, I don't think he was stepping on someone on purpose, but the Chiefs coach thought he was. The Chiefs coach, Greg Lewis, actually physically grabbed him and pushed him off. And then Ronnie Harrison shoved him back. Tony Romo kept saying, threw a punch, which drove me nuts. It was not a punch. It was, you know, and I'm not making an excuse for Ronnie Harrison. He should not have done that. You can't put your hands on a coach like that. But again, you know, shouldn't coaches be held to a higher standard as well? I mean, they, you know, he basically started the altercation. He put his hands on Ronnie Harrison. Ronnie Harrison took that as a, hey, you know, this guy's messing with me, retaliated. So again, I think that coach should be, if he's not suspended for a game, he should be fined, in my opinion. Sure. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, so if you watch the footage, as he made the tackle and as he's getting up, you know, they're tangled up. I mean, you just tackled a guy. He's getting up and a Chiefs lineman comes across and blocks his path. So he has to like move his foot.
Sure.
And as he's moving his foot, that's when the coach grabs and pushes him. So he almost got boxed in.
Yes.
By the lineman.
Exactly.
And that's when the coach pushed him. And then, you know, that then we saw the retaliation.
Well, and another thing too, is like I mentioned with Tony Romo, I felt like this was the lead, you know, this was the main game. It was the 4:30 game. You got your Jim Nance, Tony Romo, big broadcasting crew. The NFL is obviously watching this game intently just for ratings purposes, whatever. And I felt like they talked about it so much and there was so much of a delay that it forced wherever the replay is, you know, New York or wherever it's initiated from, to call in and say, hey, we need to look at this and then eject him. Yeah. Now, the Browns were playing without Grant Delpit, one of their possible starters at safety. Then you lose Harrison, you know, maybe that Tyreek Hill later in the play, right, later in the game doesn't happen if you have a couple fresh safeties. 100%. John Johnson was out with cramps throughout the game. So, and apparently it was like 90 degrees at kickoff. So tempers flared. That obviously hurt the Browns more so than the Chiefs. And it stunk. It was a loss. But so that was another takeaway from this game. And then the final takeaway I have from this game is Baker Mayfield could be very, very special. However, and I'm going to just put this caveat on it, he has to be able to finish games. All of the great quarterbacks in the league, Tom Brady, Patrick Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers, not so much Sunday, but, you know, all the great quarterbacks, you know, and you can go back, you can go Montana, Elway, whoever. Those guys, you know, are going to make throws in the fourth quarter to finish games, and they have to pass. They have to pass, and they don't. You know, the defense can key on the pass. However, they're still able to finish those drives, make those plays, and get their team down for a touchdown or a field goal or whatever it might be to finish the game. The Browns were down 4 on that last drive and, you know, obviously needed a touchdown. They were not able to get the job done. I do not blame that interception on Baker Mayfield. You know, unfortunately, he was trying to throw that last ball away and got tripped up and, you know, just didn't have quite the oomph on the pass to get it out of bounds. But, you know, they got him to about the 50-yard line with about a minute to go, and it would have been nice to see what would have happened if that ball would have been incomplete. You start second down with about a minute left on the clock. But let me go over a few things from this game, a few other points I want to make. So, again, no need to panic. I think this team's has a very bright season ahead of it, and this roster is absolutely loaded. So obviously no OBJ. We talked about that. That's going to hurt. That's going to limit the Browns offense. But with him back, I really think this could be something special. Now, Jedrick Wills, another player that's huge to this Browns success. He's their starting left tackle, left the game, and he's played two games in Kansas City, and both times he's got hurt. First play of the playoff game last year, and then I can't remember when he got hurt in this game, but he missed a significant chunk of the game.
Yeah, it was in the second quarter,
I think. Was in the second? Okay. So Chris Hubbard stepped up and stepped in and did admirably, but you know, you'd still rather have Jedrick Wills in there to you know, be that anchor of the line. Now, apparently it's just an ankle sprain. He's day-to-day, so he should be back on Sunday. But if not, we have a very good replacement to put in there. A couple real good positives I took away from this game. David Njoku was awesome. And Anthony Schwartz.
Yes.
We had heard Anthony Schwartz about his speed. We had heard about him, you know, possibly having some drop issues in preseason camp. But Anthony Schwartz really, really, really played well. David Njoku as well had great games, really great games. Two of the top receivers for the Browns in this game. Obviously, Donovan Peoples-Jones did not have a major impact. He picked up a big third down later in the game, but only one target, one catch for 4 yards. So
right. He's
a guy they're going to need throughout this season. But for whatever reason, maybe Anthony Schwartz was a bigger part of the game plan. You know, it's, you know, you're kind of feeling out yourself on the first couple weeks. So I think you're going to see Donovan Peoples-Jones and Higgins in there probably a little bit more, even with Odell Beckham coming back. So the biggest positive of this game, if you watch the first two quarters, the first three drives of the game, the Browns scored 22 points. They go down, score three touchdowns. And on that first touchdown, they had a 2-point conversion. So first drive, 13 plays, 75 yards, a touchdown, and then the Nick Chubb scoring, and then Kareem Hunt with a 2-point conversion, 7 minutes and 7 seconds off the clock. The next drive, 6 plays, 75 yards. That was the Jarvis Landry, I believe it was a fourth down play where he, you know, kind of took the wide receiver, you know, like the little handoff around the corner and scored, kind of twisted and got in the end zone. That drive took 3 minutes and 23 seconds. Next drive, 6 plays, 81 yards, another Nick Chubb touchdown, basically walked in untouched on that third touchdown. That play that drive took 3 minutes and 35 seconds. So you're looking at about a whole quarter in those three drives of game time chewed up by the offense, moving the ball on the Kansas City defense. And overall for the game, the Browns had 457 yards of total offense to the Chiefs 397. So they actually outgained the Chiefs by 60 yards, which is very, very impressive. So those were my big positives from the game. Obviously, the huge negative plays, Lucas, you and I talked about it before we came on air. The Chubb fumble in the third quarter was huge.
Huge.
You know, he had a game a couple years back against New England, and he fumbled twice in that game. But he is just not a guy that fumbles very often.
No.
You know, he's a guy you can count on, rely on. And obviously, you know, Browns fans love Nick Chubb, you know.
He had an amazing game. Minus the fumble. I mean.
Exactly.
But you could put just as much blame on the dropped punt.
Exactly. Yeah, right.
I mean.
Yeah.
That drop punt really set us back.
Yeah. That. So at the time Nick Chubb fumbled, Kansas City had just scored. So the Browns driving a little bit. Chubb fumbles. You know, I think the Browns had the ball like something like 4 plays in the whole third quarter. So that really, the Browns were up 22-17 at the time when Nick Chubb fumbled. the Browns were able, the defense was able to hold them to a field goal, which was great. So they go down and score again, 29-20. Then the Chiefs had the one play touchdown. That to me was just as big of a play as the Chubb fumble or the drop punt or the interception at the end of the game, because that one play literally changed the whole course of the game in terms of momentum, in terms of, you know, Kansas City did not even have to work. You know, it was a 90 degree day. They didn't have to break a sweat.
Right.
And I don't know if that play was more good or more lucky, because Patrick Mahomes literally rolls out pretty good pass rush. He got hit pretty good on that play, throws the ball down about 50 yards in the air, and John Johnson just kind of got turned around. I don't know if it was a missed coverage or, you know, Tyreek Hill's just a freak athlete too, yeah. You know, and just makes the play, runs in, 75 yard touchdown, backbreaker. That gets it to 29-27. The Browns go three and out, and then that's when the drop punt happens. And Jamie Gillen, we all, you know, the Scottish hammer, I believe we call him, you know, the guy is absolutely jacked. There's no denying that. I heard somebody say, oh, well, he dropped the fumble because he dropped the snap because he's too damn strong. He's got to get out of the weight room and just look like a normal punter. So hopefully that is the only time in his career that he ever drops a punt. I can't remember that ever happening before with him, at least. And that's just not something you see very often. So you can't blame Kevin Stefanski for that. You can't blame the offense. You can't blame the defense for that. You can't blame the special teams coordinator. It's a player that's just got to make the basic simple
100%. Play, you know? Do you think you had enough time to get a kickoff?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I do. Or at least maybe it wasn't going to go far, but instead of being a 15-yard drive, maybe it forces them to the 40 and, you know, they can hold them to a field goal or exactly, something. So. I don't know. And then
a lot of debate on that, whether he could get it off or not.
It would have been, I think it would have been close, but I think he could. I think as soon as he dropped it, he immediately panicked and was like, I'm going to run.
100%. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause I mean, you could even get the, you know, roughing the punter.
Exactly.
It could have went for that.
Exactly. So, you know, the game, we obviously lose 33-29. Again, no need to panic. This team will be just fine. But we'll move on. We are on to Houston, the Texans. One last week, we'll talk about some of the NFL games in just a minute. But the 1-0 Houston Texans will come to Cleveland for week two. We'll talk more about that game on Thursday. So let's go on now. I did not have these images made on Thursday for the show, and our show was like 3 hours on Thursday. So I kind of saved this for Tuesday's show. So my AFC predictions, I'm just going to put up on the screen for each division. So I obviously have Kansas City winning the AFC West. I think they will probably be the one seed. I have the Cleveland Browns winning the AFC North at 12-5. I have the Buffalo Bills, even though they lost to the Steelers on Sunday, I still have them winning the AFC East. And then Tennessee, who got absolutely throttled on Sunday. They got destroyed. I still have them winning the AFC South. So the wild cards I have is the Pittsburgh Steelers. I have the Pittsburgh Steelers going 10-7. New England, I think, is going to sneak into the playoffs. And then everybody seems to be on the Chargers bandwagon this year and love the I'm probably going to slip and call them San Diego a few times, but the LA Chargers, and everyone loves Justin Herbert. So they seem to be the darling pick this year. So, those are my AFC predictions. I'll go now to my NFC or actually, I'm sorry. I'll go now to my AFC North predictions. So I have the Browns at, 12-5. I have also the Steelers and the Ravens both at 10-7. I think they're both going to be sneaky playoff teams. I do think the Steelers will somehow, and I don't know what the tiebreaker is going to be, but I think if I have to give the edge to either team, I'm going to give it to the Steelers. I have the Steelers and the Ravens both going 10-7. And then the Bengals picked up a nice overtime win on Sunday. I have them going 7-10 on the season. Joe Burrow looks really good, and they have a very, very formidable offense. So, you know, the Bengals are going to not just be a pushover this year. They're going to be a very, very good team. Joe Mixon looks good. They have those three stud receivers. So as long as they can keep Burrow healthy, they should be pretty good.
Yeah, he's finally getting settled in, you know, that first year.
Mm-hmm.
You know how it goes with rookie quarterbacks and like that. So,
well, and I mean, you know, who knows what he would have done in those last couple games if he didn't. He tore basically every ligament in his knee. So yeah. I just want to close the book here on the Browns. Chiefs talk, you know, obviously a few negative notes for the Browns that I have to address. And next year, hopefully I can close the book on this. But the Browns are 1-21-1 since our return in opening week games. Their only win, their last opening win was in 2004 against Baltimore. And that game was at home. Their last opening game win was in 1994 on the road. So long, long time. We are obviously talked about Jamie Gillum. Baker Mayfield, overall, pretty nice game. 21 of 28. That's 75%. 321 yards. He only had the one interception, no touchdowns, because our running game was pretty solid. Chubb and Hunt averaged 5.5 yards carry, another positive. Nick Chubb had 83 yards, two touchdowns, and the one fumble. They both combined for 116 yards rushing, and they both combined for 5 catches and 46 yards. Receiving, Jarvis Landry. Jarvis Landry had a really nice game. 5 receptions, 71 yards, a rushing touchdown. Njoku, 3 receptions, 76 yards, a couple really, really nice plays. And Anthony Schwartz, 3 receptions, 69 yards, and also 17 yards rushing on an end around. So pretty nice. As I mentioned too, Grant Delpit was out. Ronnie Harrison was ejected. Hopefully we get those two guys back for next week's game. You know, I know this was one of my pet peeves. And it still is. I don't want to sound too hypocritical, but I saw this image and I had to share it. So this was Tony Romo after the game getting his autograph signed by Patrick Mahomes. So just thought that was worth sharing there. So, you know, good for you, Tony, getting Patrick's autograph. All right, let's switch to my AFC. My NFC predictions. So let's start in the NFC West, which to me, the NFC West is probably the best division in football. I don't know if there's a bad team in that division. I have the San Francisco 49ers winning that division. I think they're going to be very, very, very good this year. They did lose one of their starting running backs, but they have a stable of running backs. They have 4 or 5 guys that are plug and play. So San Francisco, I have winning the NFC West. Green Bay, even though they got destroyed 38-3, I think they're still going to win the NFC North because the NFC North is just bad. I also have Tampa Bay winning the NFC South, and I have Dallas winning. What division is that? NFC East. Sorry. Couldn't think of what it was. The NFC East again is a bad division too. And I really, really, really think, they're going to, you know, make some noise. They look pretty, pretty good the other day. And, you know, we'll see. So also in the wild card, I have the Seattle Seahawks, the Los Angeles Rams, and the New Orleans Saints. So Seattle, LA, and San Francisco, I all have making the playoffs in the NFC West. So 3 teams from the NFC West making the playoffs, in my opinion. All right, let's move on and let's go to the overall NFL scoreboard. I just want to give you a couple thoughts on what I had thought here with my initial impressions of week one. So you can see the 1-0 teams are on the left, 0-1 teams are on the right, and we'll talk about that. I'm just getting my notes in order here. Sorry about that. But so let's just take a look at this. The teams... and lost my notes, but the overall, you know, the NFC West really, really dominated. They looked great. The AFC South looked really bad. You know, there's a lot of overreactions for week one that we could make, but you know, that doesn't necessarily mean that's how the season's going to go. But you know, there's a lot you can lose in week one and be okay. You can also win in week one and not be okay. So there we go. There's my first. I had to look through my 35 pages of notes. But Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers basically stunk. So they were destroyed by New Orleans. That game was actually played in Jacksonville. Trevor Lawrence, this is an interesting stat I read over the weekend. Trevor Lawrence, first regular season game he's ever lost, ever. High school, college, and now obviously first game as a pro. Urban Meyer debuted, not great, but this is not going to be a fun season for Urban Meyer and the Jaguars. I have already heard Urban Meyer rumored to USC. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But that's a whole big mess down in Jacksonville, and I don't think it's going to be a pretty season for them. Russell Wilson continues to impress, obviously, early on in the season. I mentioned the AFC South looked really bad. Tennessee got destroyed by Arizona. The Colts lost to Seattle. Jacksonville stinks. And Houston was the only team that picked up the win, and they beat Jacksonville. So the Steelers looked really good. I don't want to overlook that win. The Steelers offense, again, Najee Harris is going to basically play every down for them. They need Najee Harris. He's going to be a very important back for the Steelers. Big Ben still cannot throw the ball downfield from my observations, but that game really changed in the second half. Steelers have a phenomenal defense, and obviously their special teams is really solid too. They blocked a punt, which really helped sway the tide of that game. And one other fact, the New York teams both are going to stink again this year. The Giants stink. The Jets stink. The Giants might be able to do something this year, but both of those teams are not going to be very good at all this year. All right. Let's talk real quick about some of the top fantasy performers from over the weekend. So top fantasy performers, Jameis Winston. He lit it up. Five touchdowns. Didn't have a ton of yards, but five touchdowns in New Orleans win. First game as a starter since heading to New Orleans from Tampa Bay. Tyreek Hill, we mentioned earlier. Tyreek Hill had 11 receptions, nearly 200 yards receiving and a touchdown. Debo Samuel for the 49ers had a great game. Kyler Murray had a phenomenal game for Arizona. Patrick Mahomes. Now, I'm going to real quick just read you some Patrick Mahomes stats. He is, first of all, 11-0 in the month of September. He has 35 touchdowns, zero interceptions, which is the best of any quarterback in any month ever in NFL history. So to say you want to play Patrick Mahomes in September is not ideal. In the Browns game, Patrick through 27 of 36 for 337 yards, three touchdowns, and also had a rushing touchdowns. And he has led, listen to this, even in the games he's lost, he has led in every game he's ever played, which is 47 games. Passed Kurt Warner for the most passing yards in his first 50 games with 14,489 yards in his first. He's actually only played 47 games, and passed Dan Marino for most passing touchdowns in the first 50 games of his career. Again, he's only played 47 with 117 touchdowns. So very, very, very impressive. Joe Mixon, as I mentioned earlier, for the Bengals, had a really nice game. Nick Chubb did have a nice game outside of that fumble. Christian McCaffrey showed when he is healthy, he could be the most dynamic player in the league. I think he had about close to 100 yards rushing and close to 100 yards receiving for Carolina in their win. Amari Cooper for Dallas on Thursday night had a great game. And Rob Gronkowski as well. At this time last year, he was retired and just put up some phenomenal, phenomenal numbers for the world champion Buccaneers. So that is, I'm going to try to probably highlight some fantasy guys from each week and see what they're doing. So I wanted to bring this back. We had talked about this a few weeks ago on the show. Now, the NFL Network released its top 100. And so I took a guess at who their top 10 guys were. And I kind of got it fairly correct. I just had them in a different order. So looking at the right versus the left on this graphic, you're going to see, here's my top 10 players versus the NFL Network top 10 players. So I had Tom Brady coming in first. They had him ranked number 7. Patrick Mahomes, I had 2nd. They had him ranked 1st. Aaron Rodgers, I had ranked 3rd. He was 3rd. Aaron Donald, I had 4th. They had him 2nd. Davante Adams, I had 5th. He came in 6th. Kelsey, I had in 6th. He came in 5th. Derrick Henry, I had 7th. And he came in 4th. Josh Allen, I had 8th. He finished number 10. DeAndre Hopkins, I had number 9. He came in 8. And TJ Watt, I had number 10. He came in at number 9. So I thought that was pretty pretty accurate, you know, overall. So I, you know, just get, I guess I'm tooting my own horn there for a minute, but we'll move on from that. Now, I already mentioned the big story with the Browns and the NFL from week one. Now we're going to move over to the college football ranks and go to Ohio State. Now, about 2 weeks ago, I put out my top 5 biggest storylines for the Buckeyes, and we're going to sort of revisit that and see how that played out again in their loss against Oregon this past weekend. So I'm going to have Lucas put up this graphic, and these were my top 5 headlines coming into the season for the Buckeyes. So let's start, first of all, with redshirt freshman quarterback C.J. Stroud. And he had he threw the ball 54 times on Saturday. Is not something we want to be doing regularly. Probably around the 30, you know, attempts is where we want to be. We want to run the ball a little bit more. But C.J. Stroud threw for 484 yards, which is only 15 short of Ohio State's all-time record. He threw for 3 touchdowns, 1 INT, which was a big interception, sort of along the lines of the Browns Chiefs games. My one big concern with C.J. Stroud, though, the Buckeyes quarterbacks over the last bunch of years, Justin Fields, JT Barrett, Braxton Miller, whoever it might be, they all look to run the ball if something wasn't there. Now, C.J. Stroud does not look to extend the play and run and get down. He did have a big first down scramble late in the fourth quarter that would have got them a first down deep in Oregon territory. Unfortunately, that play was called back by holding call. But, you know, he didn't look to rush the ball very often. I think he had 3 rush attempts in this game. And for those RPOs and, you know, just overall for the defense looking into him, they have to be able to key on not just the running back. They have to be able to, you know, you got to put a different thought in their head of, hey, maybe Stroud might be running versus Mayan Williams or Travion Henderson, whatever it might be. So let's get into one other of the positives, the record setting offense. Ohio State's receivers are absolutely loaded. I have 2 of them up on the graphic. I have Olave. I have Wilson. The other one that really showed out in this game was Jackson Smith and Jigba. Now let me just listen to all these stats. First of all, those 3 guys were all over 100 yards receiving. Chris Olave had 12 catches for 126 yards. Garrett Wilson, 8 catches for 117 yards and a touchdown. And Smith and Jigba, 7 catches, 145 yards and 2 touchdowns. So very, very, very impressive, you know, for the Buckeyes. They were able to run the ball a little bit, but they just didn't look too much to run it consistently, in my opinion. So again, don't count the Buckeyes out, just like the Browns. We're not counting them out. It's one loss. It's early in the season. College football, the losses mean a little bit more, obviously, than the NFL at this point of the season. But looking at their schedule, you know, again, there's a couple of games that where they really need to get right. You know, they play Tulsa this week. They have Akron. They have Rutgers. And they have Maryland before they get into you know, a big game against the Indiana Hoosiers late in October. So they really need to get this right. Ryan Day, you know, obviously not his best game, but this was his first regular season loss in his career. So I think now he's 24-1 in the regular season. But the biggest takeaway from my preseason headlines was Kerry Combs as the defensive coordinator. Ohio State gave up a ridiculous amount of rushing yards, 269 rushing yards, 7.1 yards a carry, and they didn't force any turnovers. And basically, three of the four touchdowns Oregon scored were on the same play, or three of the five touchdowns they scored were on the same exact play. It was a run to the left where you know, they didn't keep contain on the edge. The corners basically got blocked out by each other. The safety wasn't in position to make a play, and Oregon was able to just chunk them with yards and gash them with yards on plays to the left. Now, I don't claim to be an expert on the defensive side of the ball or coaching football in general at all, but I think any common fan can see if they're gashing you with that same play over and over and over again, and you're not fixing it, at some point you can blame the players, but at the next point, it's time to start looking at the scheme and the strategy. Ohio State does have some very, very talented, talented defensive players. Not as much on this on the offensive side of the ball, but they really need to figure this out because you know, it's week two. You know, you've now dropped to number 9 in the poll. We'll get to that in a little bit. But Ohio State, this is not the standard that we are used to as Buckeye fans on the defensive side of the ball. So again, Ohio State was the third ranked team. They lost 35-28 to the previously ranked 11th ranked Oregon Ducks, who have now jumped to number 4 in the college football poll. But this was a big win for Oregon. Let's give them a little bit of credit too. They deserve this big win. Again, Ohio State's defense didn't do much to help them. The offense moved the ball. The offense had 612 yards of offense, 612 yards, but they stalled out a few times. They had that turnover late, you know, a couple fourth downs where they weren't able to convert. And it just a frustrating day to be a Buckeye fan on Saturday, more so on the defensive end than the offensive end. But, you know, they have a lot of things they need to correct and fix before we get into some of these tougher Big Ten games. So another negative from this game, you could argue the best player on the Buckeyes defense, Josh Proctor, is now out for the season. He actually broke his leg on an unfortunate play later in the game, and just a big loss for Ohio State. That secondary, they like to play a one high safety look, so he's basically the eraser. Any mistakes that are made, he's going to go fix it, or, you know, he's the last line of defense basically. And you know, they're going to have to count on some younger guys. Bryson Shaw is one of them. They might have to move some players around to figure it out. So I've even heard talk of their highly touted wide receivers, Julian Fleming or Emeka Ebuka, were both amazing safeties in high school, that they could possibly say, hey, for 1 year, go make us some plays on defense. So the Buckeyes are going to look at everything and anything possible to get that defense right over the next couple weeks, or Combs will not be back. He is a great guy. He is a great coach of that position of the secondary. Defensive coordinator might not be his position. He's from Cincinnati. He literally is an Ohio guy. So that it's tough to rag on him, but you know, he again just isn't quite getting the job done at the standard that they want. And the players need to look themselves in the mirror. You know, any good coach will tell you a lot of times it's about the Jimmies and the Joes, not the X's and the O's. But you know, at the same time, you have to put them in the right position to succeed. So, but again, let's not burn the season down to the ground. If you remember way back in 2014, Ohio State lost their second game of the season at home to an unranked Virginia Tech team under Urban Meyer. They also had a freshman quarterback named JT Barrett. They also went on to win the Big Ten title, beat Alabama, and beat Oregon for the national title. Now, I'm not comparing this team to that team, but I'm saying let's just not count the Buckeyes out just quite yet. So, you know, that's where we will move on. Here's a look at the new AP poll going in after week two. We have Alabama sitting at 1, Georgia 2, Oklahoma 3, Oregon jumps all the way up to 4. Iowa, the Hawkeyes look amazing. Two big wins over Indiana, just destroyed Indiana. opening week, and then beat in-state rival Iowa State this past weekend. They are number 5, Clemson at 6, Texas A&M, who survived this weekend, at 7, Cincinnati, the highest-ranked Ohio school in the poll, at 8, Ohio State at 9, and Penn State at 10. So looking at that, a lot of interesting numbers there. Again, we're only 2 weeks into the season. A lot is going to change. A lot of the sky is falling, situations. It's going to be okay. Now, is Ohio State a national title contender? Probably not this season. But I think they have a lot of room to grow and build on for next season. But again, let's not count them out this season. Let's just go out. And all their goals are still in place. Win the Big Ten, beat Michigan, beat your rivals, and get possibly the college football playoff. That's a possibility. And if not, let's get to a New Year's Six game. So that's where we're looking at right now. A couple other news and notes from around the college football world this weekend that I thought were notable. Arkansas beat Texas. Texas was the 15th ranked team. Arkansas unranked, just went in and whooped Texas. The Big 12, their best shot for the playoff is Oklahoma. Florida State stunned at home on the last play of the game by FCS school Jacksonville State. And I have a picture I'm going to show you later that was pretty funny from that game. Number 5 at the time, Texas A&M. Escaped Colorado. That game was played at Mile High Field in Denver, and that game was 10-7. So we've seen some really low scoring games in some of these top 5 matchups over the first couple weeks. Notre Dame should have lost to Toledo. They should have lost. Now they did win, so they deserve the credit for winning. Toledo scored a little bit too early. Notre Dame deserves credit because they went down, scored a touchdown, and just barely escaped the Toledo Rockets for a win in South Bend this past weekend. Michigan, they beat Washington. I told you about my bets before the season. I had Washington over 8.5 wins and Michigan under 7.5 wins. Michigan's 2-0, Washington's 0-2. It's not looking so good for my bets right now. They're both still alive, so we'll see. But Michigan, I think now is ranked in the top 25. I think they're number 25. And they deserve it because they've won impressively the first 2 weeks. And again, Iowa State really, really good right now. So we'll see where they fall. One big note from the Big 12. The Big 12, as you remember, Texas and Oklahoma are going to go to the SEC. Now that'll take place, I think, in 2024, 2025. But the Big 12 conference wants to keep itself together. They unanimously voted to accept BYU, Cincinnati, Houston, and UCF into the conference. So that's a big win for them, especially right now, Cincinnati playing some good football. That'll be interesting to see that conference as a whole, because the Big 12 does have some nice teams, and it's good to keep them alive. And I think this scheduling alliance between the ACC, the Big 10, and the Pac-12 will help, and maybe we can incorporate the Big 12 into that going forward too. Another big news in college football: USC head coach Clay Helton was fired after 2 weeks. They lost to Stanford this past weekend, and you are going to hear a lot of news. Like, I kind of feel bad for Clay Helton because he's sort of been a lame duck coach for like 3 or 4 years now. I feel like every year he's talked about, oh, they're just going to fire Clay Helton and move on to the next guy. So as I mentioned earlier in the show, I've already heard Urban Meyer's name mentioned. I've heard Luke Fickell from Cincinnati. I've heard two or three other names that I'm not sure about, are actual candidates, or they're just being thrown out there. I've heard even Pete Carroll was asked at a press conference yesterday about if he would be interested in going back. And obviously he shot that down. USC was extremely dominant, almost borderline dynasty in the mid-2000s. They struggled before Pete Carroll was there. They have since struggled afterwards. But, it's a very, very good program in L.A. You have a ton of talent in that Southern California area. It should be a recruiting hotbed, and we'll see where they decide to go with that. So that should be very, very, very interesting. And I want to bring it back real quick to this. I had mentioned to you the Florida State lost on its last play of the game to Jacksonville State, who, by the way, FCS, so same, you know, level as YSU or, you know, North Dakota State, stuff like that. Now, a player, a lineman for Florida State was had planned this before the game, but he got down on one knee and engaged. So he engaged during the after the game during Florida A&M, or I'm sorry, Jacksonville State's victory celebration that was going on in the background, you know, after his team lost. And obviously this probably was planned and probably had a lot of family and friends there. I just thought, I was like, oh man, I feel for this guy and this girl, like, after a loss. But it should be a very happy moment, and unfortunately probably not the happiest, but hey, you know, congrats to that couple. So one other thing this past weekend, Derek Jeter, among others, was elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame. He obviously had a great career. Now, you know, shortstop for the New York Yankees, and you're an all-star year in and year out, you're going to be world famous. You know, there's a few things, you know, if you're the quarterback for the Cowboys or the, you know, shortstop for the Yankees or whatever it might be, you're going to get some notoriety. Now, Derek Jeter did a lot on the field, but I want to focus on some of his off the field accomplishments. Lucas, if you don't mind throwing this image up, they're going to want to see this image over me. But Derek Jeter's Hall of Fame resume off the field. So off the field, let me just move so I pronounce this right. So Adriana Lima, Minka Kelly. Minka Kelly, if you haven't seen Minka Kelly, my God, great actress, but also just beautiful. I used to have a crush on Jordana Brewster growing up. She was phenomenal. He's also dated Tyra Banks, Vanessa Lachey, Mariah Carey, Vita Guerrera, and then Hannah Davis, who I believe he's actually now married to. I could only fit four in the image, but you get the picture. You know what I'm saying? So I just put, hey, Derek, congratulations on all your success from all of us here at the 330 Sports Show. But because, man, you know, it's like that little kid. If you see that little gif, it's like where he has the hat and it's just like, respect, respect to you, Derek Jeter. Congratulations on all your success on and off the court. Real quick, Ben Simmons news. Ben Simmons, Philadelphia is trying to trade him. The Cavs do want him, but I don't know if they're going to make that happen. But I could see Philadelphia trading him to some team. I've heard Sacramento. I've heard, you know, I've heard lots of different teams. But where there's smoke, there's fire. He's also a representative of Clutch Sports, which is LeBron's agency. And, you know, those guys have a tendency to be able to force where they want to go. So it's going to be interesting to see where Ben Simmons ends up next year. Ideally, that would be awesome as Cavs fans to, you know, but I don't think we're going to get him. 16 points, 8 rebounds, 8 assists type guy. Not a great shooter, as we all know, but a great basketball player overall. And I want to finish the show with just one or two more things. So the Miami Marlins last week debuted a advertisement. I believe they call it Toast Crunch. Now, I don't know if this is Cinnamon Toast Crunch or whatever, but this is what the mascot looks like if you take a look at the screen. He is basically a piece of Cinnamon Toast Crunch, but he's got these crazy eyes and I want you to look where they put him. They put him right behind home plate. So when the pitcher is on the mound, that is literally what he's staring at, which I've heard a lot of people just reference that as straight nightmare fuel. So that's a very interesting. I would have him move when my team is pitching and then be like, all right, when the other team's pitching, you can go back. So I don't know. I just thought that was worth noting there, but you know, we're gonna have our usual Thursday show coming up this next weekend or this coming week, so we'll go from there. We'll see, and you know, but we have a big football show coming up, and you know, we'll have our YSN Steve Leslie joining us for high school football. We'll have Browns previews, AFC North stuff. We'll have Ohio State talk and much more. So if you are able, share this out. We appreciate you all listening, and everyone have a great day.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us. Thank you.